Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP, professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Podcast available under Public Affairs as well as on many streaming services and the WDIY app. Today is July 30th, 2025. The markets were pretty flat today, but mixed, with the Dow closing down at 44,461, the NASDAQ up at 21,129, and the S&P down slightly at 6,362. Tonight, what are we talking about? We're talking about considerations on marital status changes. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Jennifer's in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Jennifer and she'll write it down and bring it in. You can also submit questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, tonight we are talking about considerations on marital status changes. And really, my I'll give you kind of the outline of the show and why this is kind of important. I'm not going to be talking like facts and figures like I might when I'm talking about taxes or retirement accounts and things like that. I just want some general understanding around what do I mean about considerations on marital status changes. So let's first give the big picture, and then I'll dive into each of the areas I think it's worth kind of talking about. So when I talk about marital status could be single. You could just be single and on your own, but you could be single and in a relationship. You could be married with no children. You could be married with children. You could be married with blended families, or just separated and blended families, or married but separated. Okay? So all of these different statuses would have an impact on either maybe how you're holding assets, how you're titling assets, how you're naming beneficiaries on your assets, how you're planning for taxes with these assets, and if you were to pass away, part of your estate planning, what happens to these assets. So there are differences when we talk about marital status and the implications of some of these statuses. As to community property states, I can talk about that in a little bit. Money management, like do you keep your finances separate or do you combine them? Retirement plans, when do you update the beneficiaries and to whom? What is required? Tax planning, there's tax planning considerations around filing statuses that you may not realize might have an impact. Estate planning, you know, survivor considerations, family blended family considerations, you know, charitable giving, that type of thing. So let's kind of break it down a little bit. Marital status does play a role in our lives that must be considered for financial reasons, emotional reasons, family reasons. And with that, there may be some rules or considerations to understand before or upon embarking on changes in that marital status. but you may be locked in for whichever marital status you elected for at least that period of time. So, for example, if you get married, well, then you're not single anymore. So you've kind of locked that in. And you might think, well, what is she talking about? But there are times where you could have a marital status where you could be separate. You married, but separate. And that could have a whole nother implications to it. So let me briefly talk about community property states. We air out of Pennsylvania, which is not a community property state, but there are listeners who could be from all over the country. I've had listeners from California, and that is a community property state, for example. And so I pulled up some information from a website that I like. It's called NOLA.com. And it's kind of more legal information. And this was an article written by Mary Randolph, who's an attorney from UC Berkeley School of Law. It was dated April 19th, 2024. And it's if you don't want to leave retirement accounts to your spouse. But more importantly, I kind of wanted to highlight the information about community property states there in reference to individual retirement accounts. But let me first start about the community property states. So we have Alaska, Arizona, California, Idaho, Louisiana, Nevada, New Mexico, Texas, Washington, and Wisconsin. Now, Alaska has an asterisk, and it says only if the spouses sign a community property agreement. So there are different rules in states where you have community property. Big picture, I'm going to talk about retirement accounts shortly, but the big picture, the concept of a community property state is that during your marriage, your assets are shared equally. And there are, different rules, I'm sure, for different states. And I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to talk about the specifics of all that. But you have to be aware that if you are living in a community property state, you may be subject to that whether or not you combine the assets. So tonight, when I'm talking about how marital status is a consideration and how you hold your assets, could be important. It's very important to understand this concept if you're in a community property state that, if you move from Pennsylvania where maybe you had, your account and your spouse had their own account, and now you move to a community property state, those assets may not be as separate as you might think going forward. They may be separate up till that point, but going forward, it could be kind of halvesies. Okay, so again, just keep that in mind. So community property states, you heard me mention those. Flags should go off if you have, maybe your kids move to one of those states and you just want to make sure that they're aware of the rules and what that might imply. And I'll read more about that article when I talk about retirement accounts. So that is community property states could have an impact on what I'm talking about tonight in general. So let's start with talking about money management. And you can be single and be in a relationship and still have joint accounts, joint, savings, joint checking. And you want to think about the titling of those kinds of assets, which I'll talk about in a minute. And some people will keep their money separate, whether they're single in a relationship or married in a relationship. So I want to talk about that when we come back from our first break. But, I thought I was up my break. I have another minute. So what I want to caution people here is if you have not embarked on a marital change and you are single and you're going into a relationship, you're going to have to make some decisions about whether you want to combine your assets and resources together with that spouse. You certainly hope that if you're going into a relationship with someone that you're hoping that it's going to be for the long term and that you're both coming in with, that goal and you're going to combine assets and maybe savings accounts together or investment accounts together. But there may be circumstances where you may not do that. And that is one of the things I want to talk about when we consider a status change in our marital status. So if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Jennifer. The number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about considerations and marital status changes. So first, let's start with money management, because I see couples go into this in a variety of different ways. Personally, I met my husband when I was 17. He was 20. And I think we had a checking account like a year into it. And we're paying, putting our money in the account and paying for things together. He got braces and, you know, we were paying for my college. So we were doing everything together right from the beginning. And we were single, but we had a joint bank account. So even though you may have a single marital status, if you're in a relationship with someone, you still may hold those assets joint. And there are different ways to hold accounts. You could hold it with joint with rights of survivorship, or you could hold it joint tenants in common. Joint with, if you're married, it can be joint by the entireties. And joint by the entireties provides some extra creditor protection. Joint with rights of survivorship, if I pass away, it automatically goes to the survivor. It doesn't have to be my spouse. It could be my, you know, boyfriend. So it would automatically go to them. But maybe we still kind of want to keep things separate, and then it would be joint tenants in common. And joint tenants in common, if something happens to me and I die, my half of the account would go to whomever I say it should go to. And so we would have to look to the will in that scenario to see who it goes to. And let's pretend, you know, I'm with my boyfriend for 4 years and we've accumulated $50,000 in our tenants with in common account. If I die, $25,000 gets, you know, kind of delineated, and that money would go, who would we know who would get it? And I would have to have a will. If I don't have a will, then it's intestate rules, and it would follow the intestate rules. Even if maybe I thought it should go to them, I didn't realize it when I opened the account. Okay, so you have to understand your status, your marital status could impact how you're holding assets and how you want them, you know, to be, you know, separated at some point. If you don't choose the right status, it may not. So you should review that often. Okay. So that is, for example, bank accounts when I'm single. If I'm married, or if I'm single and now I'm married and I had separate accounts, I may want to go in and make them joint. And that way, if they're joint with my spouse, joint with rights of by the entireties, if I die, it automatically goes to my spouse and vice versa. If they die, it automatically goes to me. So that's a nice joint status with my spouse and automatically goes to them. You don't have to do anything necessarily special to have it transfer. I could still, even if I'm married, I still could have joint tenants in common with my spouse. Now, we saw this many, many, many years ago when we had people with estates that were subject to an estate tax. That was one way that they kind of managed the equalization of property to take advantage of the estate exemption that was available to each individual. But years ago, they updated those rules. They allow something called portability, and there's not really the need to have that equalization of assets any longer, because a surviving spouse can elect portability of the deceased spouse federal estate exemption. All right. So there were reasons why we might have had tenants in common with a spouse in the past for estate planning purposes. Now, there could be a reason you go into a relationship where you still might want that even though you're married. I rarely ever see it anymore, but it could occur. And where that might occur is if you're married but blended family. So remember I mentioned a filing or a marital status might be blended family. And what do I mean by that? You could come into a new relationship where one spouse has children from a prior relationship and you might have children from a prior relationship, or the other spouse might not have children. You know, it could be any combination of blend. And there may be reasons why you have certain asset titling to maybe preserve a particular value or inheritance to those children from those separate relationships. So let's pretend you come into a relationship and, you know, I'm the wife and I have one child from a previous relationship, and husband comes into the and has, you know, seven children from another relationship. And now we're married. So what are we going to do about combining those assets or, you know, providing for those children in ways that we might want them to inherit? Maybe I, with one child, have, you know, $10 million and husband with seven children has $100,000. If I combine the assets and have everything go to my surviving spouse, my one child may not get anything because my surviving spouse, if I have named them as the primary beneficiary on everything, would then control it. It doesn't mean my child is getting anything. So this is why when we talk about considerations in marital status, we have to kind of pay attention to what are we walking into. Another, I'm going to back up to money management. So one of the other things is you want to also be aware of what kind of debt someone comes into a relationship with, because one spouse may have no debt and the other spouse may have a lot of debt. Now, back to my story with my husband and I, yes, we had debt, but we were both paying each other's debt. So I was in college, I had to take debt, then he was in master's programs and he had debt. So, you know, we just kind of like, it was all one pot. But it doesn't always go that way. You know, I know of someone who had debt from law school, and we're talking, you know, a couple $100,000 of student loan debt when the other spouse had none. So you want to kind of talk about not just the money management of the assets or the bank accounts or the investment accounts. You also want to talk about the debt before you kind of get into things. Now, when we talk about combining assets, something you have to kind of pay attention to, and I think it's really healthy to have kind of financial conversations before you get into a relationship. My husband and I both started with nothing, so it was pretty easy to factor that in. But there could be circumstances where one spouse comes in with a, you know, a much larger portfolio. And because people are waiting longer to get married now, too, I was 21 when I got married. Some people are waiting longer and they might be 30, 35, and they perhaps have accumulated a big chunk of assets. So you might be coming into a relationship with maybe, you know, $200,000 in an investment account and your new partner has nothing. Do you make that joint or not? You can. You certainly can. And again, you hope that's the goal and you're working toward that. But maybe you're gun shy. Maybe you're a product of divorced parents and you see what can happen. And maybe your parents have been divorced multiple times. Maybe you're a little gun shy about combining those assets. What you have to pay attention to in a change in marital status, again, prior to getting married, is in some states, and again, you have to review this in your state, if you combine those assets and now you're married, it could become marital property. And if you were to divorce in X number of years, that what did I say, $300,000? I don't remember what number I used. Let's pretend it was $300,000. That $300,000 now becomes marital property subject to division of assets, whereas if you had kept it separate in your own account, in your own name, that $300,000, perhaps only the growth might have been part of the marital assets because you came into the relationship with $300,000, you've preserved that $300,000. Whereas if you make it joint, it's not just the growth on the account, it could be the original asset that you had. So you have to kind of think about these things a little bit. I would say that's really also very important if there are children involved, if it is a blended family, a subsequent marriage, about preserving assets for children from that prior relationship if that's important to you. There's other ways to do that too, using life insurance, but we're just kind of talking about marital status considerations now. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
The passing of the rescission bill, stripping funding from public media, pushes us into uncharted territory. For 30 years, we've been a vital source of trusted news, local cultural programming, carefully curated music, and community affairs coverage that amplifies local voices and reflects the diversity and spirit of our region. WDIY will explore all possible funding avenues to preserve this essential service. We ask for your financial support. Donate now at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can also submit questions through yourfinancialchoices.com, and then I'll just email you back. We're talking about considerations on marital status changes. I mentioned about combining assets that you're coming into a relationship, just to kind of be careful. And I see people being more gun shy when they're coming out of a prior relationship. So typically when it's your, you know, each of your first relationships, I think there's more of an inclination to combine. But when someone is smarting from a prior, you know, breakup or prior divorce or product of that, I think they're a little bit more gun shy. So don't take it personally always. Sometimes it is just a product of, you know, trauma or experience. But you have to be aware that there could also be issues with not combining assets. So I'm talking about combining assets, which then could make it marital property subject to marital division if there was a divorce in the future. But let's pretend there isn't a divorce in the future. And now you have kept your money separate and your $300,000 has grown to $500,000 and it's still in your name alone. And you've been married for 20 years and now you die. And your spouse, you know, always relied on you for the, you know, funding of cash flow needs, et cetera. And you had that account still in your name alone and you died. Now your surviving spouse can't get access to those assets if it's in your name alone. It's going to have to go through probate. It's going to have to go through a will. And it could slow up the process. And, you know, are they your executor? Did you even have a will? I mean, half the people in the country don't have a will. So if we don't have an asset titling on that account, if we don't have a will, that really slows it down. It could really jam up your surviving spouse's, you know, cash flow needs, etc. So there's risks in not combining assets as well. A little trick I like to, you know, suggest to people if they do have those kinds of concerns and they want to keep their assets separate, you can always add a beneficiary designation on that account. And we call that a transfer on death, a TOD. And that way, if you die and you're still married and you have a TOD to your surviving spouse can have almost immediate access to those assets. And yet you were able to kind of keep them separate in the event, you know, the marriage would end in dissolution. So you don't have to worry about that. That way you do have the marriage. Okay, we have a caller on the phone. Okay.
Not on the phone.
Not on the phone. Okay. Not on the phone. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg, long marriage, two kids. Husband has two kids from a previous marriage. What will happen if they don't do their estate financial planning and someone or both passes away? And this is New Jersey residents. Okay, thank you, Jennifer. So a long marriage, two kids together, and the husband has two kids from the previous marriage. What will happen if they're... So I would expect if this is New Jersey and if they have done their estate planning, I guess what they would have to look at together is what do they want to accomplish in their estate planning as to provide for the children. There's always kind of a toss-up about providing for a surviving spouse and providing for children from a previous marriage. Typically, if you have the children together, and there were no children from a previous marriage, if you have children together, if everything goes to the surviving spouse, you hope that chances are that that surviving spouse would certainly take care of the two children that you had together. So that is not usually so much an issue, although it can be. Asterisk, it can be. That's usually not an issue. So we would expect a surviving spouse would then provide in their own estate planning that it would go to your children together. The issue is the two children from the previous marriage. Was it a good relationship? Did you stay in contact? Do those children from the previous marriage have a new stepdad that's a multimillionaire and they will never need the money? Or are they in hard times? Do you still have a good relationship with them? Do you want to provide for those children from the previous relationship? Hopefully you are still in their lives. Then what I have people consider is you do still want to provide for a surviving spouse. You do still want to provide for the children that you've had together. If you want to provide for the children from a previous relationship, you either could also add a TOD on the account, a transfer on death for a particular account to make sure that those kids get something. The bigger kind of solution I see in those circumstances is life insurance. Life insurance, you can name the beneficiaries directly. It's outside of your estate. You can say, you know, two kids from the previous marriage, and that way you know they're going to get something. That would be typical maybe with a whole life policy. I'm not an insurance agent, so I'm not making any recommendations about life insurance one way or another. But a term life could expire at some point and so or become too expensive to keep. So if you think you're going to fund your children's inheritance through life insurance, you want to maybe make sure that it's going to be there for them, that someone's paying the premiums on it, and that it doesn't expire, you know, when you turn 70 and now you croak off at 72 and the life insurance is gone and you have nothing for those two kids so from the previous marriage. So, you know, you kind of have to, like, lay it all out, look at the numbers. Back to my example of the TOD, transfer on death. Remember, this spouse is gun shy. They've been burned before. They maybe had a divorce before. Maybe they had a child from that relationship before, and they want to keep their assets separate. I love the TOD designation. If I stay married, I'm going to give it to my spouse. Well, guess what? You can add additional beneficiaries onto that TOD. It doesn't have to be just a spouse. So if, let's pretend my $300,000, remember, turned into $500,000, and I could do a TOD with 60% going to my surviving spouse and 40% going to my prior children. So you could name the kids. You could say kid one, kid two, you know, 25, or let's say 20% kid one, 20% kid two, and 60% spouse. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. I like to look at the numbers and make sure that the numbers are going to flow the way we think they're going to flow. If we rely on a surviving spouse and we give everything to the surviving spouse and we think they're going to make nice with those other kids, they don't always. I've seen wonderful results and I've seen really harsh results. So I would suggest the spouse who has the children from the previous marriage take responsibility for, you know, funding their inheritance in some way to the extent you can while you're alive to figure that out. Because once the assets go to any surviving spouse, they get complete control over how they go if you're giving everything to that surviving spouse. But I do think that life insurance can play a big role there. All right. So I hope that answered the question. It's I love blended family planning. I think it's really, really important. And I think you can make nice with everybody. And I have seen such good results with so many people. And Carolyn, that applies whether it's kids or not. So one doesn't have to have children to have those same kinds of flags go up. You could be two, as I mentioned earlier, you could be married with no children and have the same issue. If I, you know, I have six, there's six kids in my family and seven kids in my husband's family. And I may want, you know, my siblings, if I don't have any children, I may want my siblings to get nothing and give my half to charity. And my husband might want his half to go to all of his siblings. If I give everything to my husband, that's all going to his siblings, my charity doesn't get funded. Okay, so it can apply in any circumstance. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about considerations in marital status changes. So we talked about money management, whether you combine or don't combine, ways to kind of work around that without offending that new spouse by using a TOD designation, for example. Love it with you know, if you're gun shy, or I love it with blended families where you might want to make sure you're providing for, you know, children from a previous relationship as well. And then the caution about not combining. If you don't combine or at least use a TOD, you don't want to tie the hands of a surviving spouse either. But another caution on the careful of not combining or combining. Someone might come into a relationship, let's say it's a later in life marriage, you know, they have silver divorces. They probably have silver marriages. You might want to be careful on combining certain of those assets as well. You could, I was talking about kind of money and bank accounts and that type of things, but you heard me mention brokerage accounts. That could be investments where you have stocks that have a certain cost basis. And if I have a very low cost basis and I'm like 85 years old on my deathbed and I decide to get married to my bridge partner in the senior facility, these things happen. If I combine that, number one, now my, you know, my new bridge player might inherit everything and my kids might not get anything. But I might think, oh, maybe my advisor said just make everything joint. That could also impact the cost basis step up if I die. If I die, I would get a full step up if I own it by myself. If I own it with my spouse, it gets a step up in basis only on half. That is normal. You know, when we have spouses who've been married a long time, they have joint, you get a step up in basis on half the assets. That is normal. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is if someone makes them joint, you know, like shortly before they die, and then you miss the full step up, you're only going to get a half step up. So that's just a little tangent off my little comment about careful about combining or not combining. Let's talk about retirement plans for a minute. Not all retirement plans are created equal as far as spouses' rights in those retirement plans. So I'm going to refer back to that article I mentioned earlier, NOLA, that Mary Randolph wrote as to individual retirement accounts. And this was, if you don't live in a community property state, you are free to name whomever you wish as your IRA beneficiary, even if you're married. If, however, you live in a community property state, chances are your spouse or registered domestic partner or civil union partner owns half of what you have socked away in a retirement account. If any of the money you contributed was earned while you were married, that money remains community property and your spouse owns half. There are a few exceptions to this rule. Your spouse does not have any right to money you contributed before you were married or money that you alone inherited or were given. And the money you earned is yours to do with as you please. If you and your spouse signed a valid like agreement on your property. So there's community property kind of agreements that one can sign. But I want to make a point, as I said, that if you come into a relationship, even in, you know, certain states, if you keep it separate, it may stay separate, but the earnings or growth on it may be combined in a non-community property state. What about ex-spouses? Don't rely on your divorce decree. If your former spouse's name is still on a beneficiary designation form for any kind of retirement account or benefit, change it. Do it even if you think your divorce settlement agreement makes it clear that your ex is no longer entitled to anything or that divorce voids your old beneficiary designations under state law. If you don't, the former spouse could end up inheriting the benefit. And she gave an example of how that did happen to a Texas couple because the wife had not updated the beneficiary on an annuity. So the state law, I think, protected her estate or heirs on the retirement accounts, but that did not include necessarily the annuity. So again, every state has its own rules. You have to seek an attorney's advice. I highly recommend it. She goes on to say there have been even more cases about 401ks and similar plans, including severance plans and employee savings account, which are governed by the Federal Employee Retirement Income Security Act. That's what we talk about when we say ERISA. IRAs do not fall under ERISA. 401ks and 403bs do. ERISA requires the plan administrator to simply pay the proceeds to the beneficiary named by the plan participant, not to figure out who should get them under particular state law. So if you name your spouse as a beneficiary of your 401k plan, pension plan, or employer-provided life insurance, and later divorce, your ex-spouse will inherit even if your state has a law that automatically revokes an ex-spouse's right to inherit. And again, that's from an article by Mary Randolph on NOLA.com. So you really, number one, have to make sure you understand beneficiary designations, when you update them, how you update them, what it applies to, and the same might happen, with life insurance. So you have to be careful. Retirement accounts, pension benefits, and life insurance. Now, typically, if you've gone through a divorce, someone's already called through all of that, hopefully. Usually your attorneys are working with you through a divorce. They're doing what they call interrogatories. They're kind of marshaling all the assets that you both have and knowing who's getting what and how it's getting separated. And typically, if you're going through a divorce, you're going through, for retirement accounts, you're going through something called a quadro, which is a qualified domestic relation order that applies to 401ks, accounts under ERISA. It does not apply to IRAs. They may call it something like a quadro. I think I had a recent case where they called it some kind of order, but that isn't really what happens with IRAs. So the 401ks get separated before the divorce, and the IRAs will get separated after the divorce, typically. But one is under the quadro, and there's special rules around quadros where there's an exception to the early withdrawal penalty. If you have to, let's pretend you get divorced and you were the one who stayed home and raised the kids and didn't work, and you know your spouse worked and they have a $2 million retirement account. Well, under a quadro, if that was all earned during marriage and you're entitled to half that 401k under ERISA and the quadro, if you had to take money out of that 401k, a distribution, you pay income tax on it. But if you're under age 59 and a half, there's normally a 10% penalty. But if you have a quadro, that's an exception to the 10% penalty. They're not going to kick you twice when you get divorced and make you pay, you know, a penalty if under the quadro you need money and that's the only resource. Now, IRAs don't have that. There is not an exception. So if you get through a quadro, a retirement account, part of a retirement account, and you roll it over to an IRA, you no longer have that exception to the 10% penalty. So your marital status could come into play in how you're splitting assets and the rights you have to withdrawals on those assets. but also continue to be careful on how you hold them, how you title them. Very, very important. Let me think what else I wanted to say. Oh, same thing with pension plans. Typically, if your spouse in a divorce had a pension plan, you may be entitled to that. The calculations for these can be quite complicated, particularly if your spouse was participating in either that retirement plan I mentioned prior to marriage or were earning credits for the pension prior to marriage, because you would not necessarily be entitled to that. Now, I'm only talking from Pennsylvania purposes, and again, I'm not an attorney, and different states might have different rules, but typically what I see is anything that the spouse had earned prior to marriage may not come into those calculations. So let's pretend your spouse was working at this company for 20 years and earned this great pension benefit for 20 years, and then they were married to you for 10. So they were working there a total of 30 years, and their pension's based on this 30-year, you know, calculation. Well, if the first 20 years you guys weren't married, you're not going to get the benefit or half of his full benefit. It's going to be a particular calculation, and they hire people who do just this to figure it out. So be careful. The other thing is, your spouse, if you think you have a 401k, let's go back to the blended family story, and let's say that you have you've married and you're coming into the marriage with children from a prior marriage, prior relationship, and let's say you have two, and you want to make sure that your children get, you know, part of that retirement account, and but now you're married. Your spouse may have to sign off on that. Typically, the spouse has to sign off on the ERISA accounts, the 401ks, 403bs. That spouse has to sign off if you're changing the beneficiary to someone other than them, other than the spouse. So these laws protect a spouse. They might not protect your children from a prior relationship. So that would be a discussion I would want to have if I'm going into a new relationship with someone who has children from a prior marriage. I think it would be a good discussion to say, hey, just so you know, I have these kids, love them. I want them to have something too. And, you know, I'd like them to have 20% or 30% or something of my retirement account. You know, let's sign off on that. So you can have those agreements. And again, I've seen families where this works very, very well, and families where it may not. And typically, again, if you have children from a prior marriage, if you have a blended family, I say just kind of put that on the table right at the beginning and do what you want to do to make sure they get something if you want them to get something. I've seen where couples say, you know what? You know, we got divorced. Those kids don't like me anymore. They hate me. They don't want anything to do with me. Well, then maybe you don't need to take care of them and you cut them out. You know, that's up to you. But and then it might not be a problem if they come knocking. But just be aware. And sometimes they'll say, well, they don't need it. You know, now I've been married to my second spouse. I'm making this story up. I'm married to my first spouse I was married to for 4 years, and we had two kids, and you know, she took the kids away and I never talked to them. And now I've been married to this spouse for 40 years and we have, you know, two children and we're tight with them. And, you know, so circumstances are all different. So just, you know, be aware of that and just make sure you have everything aligned. Where it could be a problem, again, back to the marital status considerations, it's not just the marital status, it's also the estate planning, to Carolyn's point. What if people don't do their estate planning? If you don't have a will and you don't have contingent beneficiaries set up, then if you have, let's say, your spouse as the primary beneficiary and you didn't name any contingents and you both pass away in an unfortunate incident and you don't have a will, then the intestate rules will apply. And then those good-for-nothing kids from the first marriage that never, you know, talked to you and had nothing to do with them, then they may end up inheriting something that you had no intention of them inheriting. So you really want to make sure that you have that taken care of, that you have, you know, thought through your estate planning and have a will so that the assets go the way you want. I haven't even begun to talk about tax planning. There are a lot of tax implications to filing status as well. I'm probably just going to talk a little bit when we come back from this next break about some of the first blush thoughts people might have about married filing separate, and I'll kind of try to take the mysticism out of that. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can ask questions live, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Jennifer and she'll bring it in. Let me talk briefly about tax filing. So marital status can have an impact on your tax filing, your tax returns. Let me see if I can give an example. So let's pretend one of you makes, you know, $100,000 and the other makes $10,000. If you're single and you make $10,000, you're not paying any income tax because, you know, you have a standard deduction. It wipes it out. There's no income there. And if you're making $100,000, you're probably just in the 22% tax bracket after your standard deduction. So you have some of your monies taxed at 10, some at 12, and some at 22. If you're now married and now you're making $110,000, you have a standard deduction. What is the standard deduction these days? I don't know. I have software that does it for me. I don't know. Let's say it's $30,000. So you have 110 less 30. We're looking at 80,000. And then the tax bracket for married filing joint, the first $23,000, $24,000 is taxed at 10%. So you're getting an advantage in that scenario. That may not always occur, but it could be an advantage. There are circumstances where one might say, well, gosh, why don't we file separate? Sometimes I have clients who have come to me in past years saying my spouse has high student loans. They're in this, income adjusted loan repayment program. If her income is low, then she only has to pay so much on her loans. And that could work out for some period of time. I think it was like a 10-year term, and perhaps the loans would be forgiven after that period. I'm not sure what's happening with that with all the recent legislative changes, but let's just go with that. So they may want to file separate, and it may work for them for the loan payment. I had a circumstance where our software for our tax software automatically spits out a comparison of the taxes for a married filing joint couple and what they would pay married filing separate. So it just kind of it's rare that married filing separate is better. Very rare. Here was the issue. In this circumstance, the couple was over age 65. They were on Medicare. They saw this software split. They said, hey, let's file separate because we're going to save all these taxes. And so, okay, we're going to file separate instead of filing joint. They're going to save income tax. At first blush, it looks like it's a great deal. Well, then they got hit on the Medicare premiums because the income-related monthly adjustment amount for married filing separate is a very stringent number, and they would have ended up paying a very high Medicare premium in that circumstance. So it's not always better to file separate. So you have to be very careful on your filing status. The other thing I want to point out is that I had mentioned the, you know, different tax rates. You know, we have 10%, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, 37. And for single people, it's 35% up to $626,000. For married filing joint, it's 35% up to $751,000. So in that circumstance, if you're really both high earners, single might be better filing. Don't get married. But there's other advantages to being married. But when we look at married filing separate, they are at 35% at $375,000. But they're at 37% at 375.8. 37%. So it really hits. And then there's all kinds of limitations on capital gains. Married filing separate is just, it's not usually to anybody's advantage. So you have to be aware of the filing status changes that could impact you for taxes as well. So it could be a single filing status. It could be head of household. If you're single but have a child in the home that you're responsible for and you meet all the qualifications for head of household, the head of household filing status is better than the single filing status. So be aware of that. And you could be still married and separated but may qualify for the head of household status. So you just have to kind of read the rules on all of that. So now let me go to estate planning again. So remember I said you could do a lot with asset titling, with beneficiary designations, and I said you should also update the will. And the reason we want you to update the will is because if you have not carefully named, for example, beneficiaries and or contingent beneficiaries, if you have assets that end up defaulting by going to the estate, you want to make sure that your will is kind of like the catch-all. It's the safety net for anything that you missed doing. So I often see people get all wrapped up about avoiding probate. And in certain states, probate is not a problem at all. It's very easy. Probate means you have to go to the courthouse, get sworn in as an executor, and then your executor kind of manages those assets that go through the will. The assets that go through the will are those assets that don't have a beneficiary designation or they don't have asset titling on them. So you have to look to the will to see who gets them. And the executor, that's their job. So that's probate. And it can be fairly easy in some states and a little bit dragged out and complicated in other states, and could be a problem if you have real estate or businesses in other states as well. So for the estate, though, it's kind of that catch-all if you forgot to do asset titling or beneficiary designation. So remember, I said you can add, nowadays I see it so much more than I did 30 years ago, this designation called TOD, transfer on death. You can do that on bank accounts. You can do it on brokerage accounts. And then, of course, on retirement accounts, you can name beneficiaries. Here's the point tonight. Do you have contingent beneficiaries? If something happens, if your marital status is joint, do you have contingent beneficiaries on those accounts? Because if something happens to both of you, quite often, if you're married, you're traveling together, not always, but quite often you're traveling together. If something happens to both of you and you do not have contingent beneficiaries, it could default to your estate. Now, there are certain custodians or life insurance providers, maybe annuity providers, certain retirement accounts. They may have a default that will say, if you don't have a contingent, it would go to your children. But they may not have that default. The default could be your estate, and then it's going to go to the estate. And maybe you didn't update your will, and maybe your will said to, you know, Bobby and Janie, my first two kids, if my spouse passed away and it's Bob and Janie, you know, are my, you know, beneficiaries of my will. But you forgot you had Timmy and, you know, Alice, you know, so you have to be very careful. Make sure that you keep your documents updated. Personally, I like primary beneficiaries and contingent beneficiaries on everything. I think it's easier to change and update than having to go update the will. So you want your will to, you know, cover, as I said, that catch-all, be the safety net. But you really want your, you know, your beneficiary designations, for example, on your retirement accounts to have those primary and contingent beneficiaries. And I was mentioning to clients earlier, when you have charitable intent, I love using IRAs for that. So if you are single, that's really easy. You could name charities as beneficiaries of your IRA. They just can get the money quite quickly. If you're married and you name your spouse as the primary beneficiary, everything goes to them. If you both pass away and your contingent beneficiary is charity, that's easy. You change your mind about the charities. You just change your, you update your beneficiary designation. It's quite easy. Just remember that if you have everything going to a surviving spouse, they then will control how those assets go. And if you're the one who loves the dogs and want everything go to the, you know, animal shelter, and your spouse loves, what could it be? I don't know. What could it be? ABC charity. And you've had conflicts about this. Well, if everything's going to your spouse, they could have everything go to ABC charity. Same thing with individual beneficiaries. It could be that you have it going to, you know, your surviving spouse and your children from your marriage. Maybe you have 50% going to your surviving spouse and 50% going to your children from a previous relationship. Just get that all set up, contingent and primary. The nice thing about contingent beneficiaries as well is that a primary beneficiary may say they don't want it, and you can do something called a disclaimer. So I've had circumstances where a husband and wife, husband passes away, wife says, I don't really need any of that money, and she really wants to gift to her children. You can just have a disclaimer because the husband said to my wife, and if not my wife, my contingent beneficiaries are my children. Wife can disclaim some portion of it, some dollar amount or some percentage of it, says, I don't want all of that IRA. I just want some of the IRA. Well, if it's $1 million IRA and everything goes to the spouse, and if not spouse, then my three children, spouse can say, I don't want half of it. So then surviving spouse takes $500,000 and the three kids split the other $500,000. So it's another reason I love contingent beneficiaries. It allows a surviving spouse to disclaim something. So in my little story, if we have two spouses, one passes away and, you know, I name my husband as my primary beneficiary and I name my favorite charities as contingent, my surviving spouse could say, you know what? That charity meant so much to my wife. I'm going to disclaim some of this IRA so that I can, you know, fulfill some of her wish and let some of it go to charity. All right. I know that's a lot I've just packed in. Basically, you need to know what options might be available to you. And, you know, talking to your attorney or financial advisor, you know, helps you explore what options might be available to you. The big takeaways tonight that I wanted to make sure I kind of conveyed in talking about marital status and considerations in marital status is prior to relationship, during a relationship, after a relationship, be very aware of number one, money management. We're talking about asset titling. We're talking about combining assets. What titling do you have on the assets? Do you combine them? Do you not combine them? Do you make them joint? Joint with rights of survivorship? Joint with by the entireties in a marriage? Joint tenants in common where you kind of keep yours and they keep theirs? Retirement accounts, beneficiary designations, which you can also add on to bank accounts, as I mentioned, or brokerage accounts. Retirement accounts, we're looking at making sure you pay attention to the primary beneficiary and contingent beneficiaries. And if you do have a marital status change, make sure that you're reviewing that and how important it is to you to, you know, provide for that spouse, or if in a blended family, to provide for children. How do you break that up? How do you separate it? And making sure that you have the proper sign-offs on those retirement accounts, if they're ERISA accounts, 401ks, 403bs, that your spouse is signing off if you make someone a beneficiary other than them or some portion of it. And do the same thing for IRAs, which have their own set of rules. You don't have to have a spouse sign off necessarily, but be aware of what that might be. There could be, in some states, most states, a spouse could elect against the will or elect against the estate and say, I still, if my deceased spouse kind of writes me out, might I still have access to some funds? They probably do. So you want to be aware of that. Community states in particular. And then, of course, taxes. Don't be lured in thinking a married filing separate status is going to be better for you. Generally, it's not. So be very aware of that and be careful and cautionary before you do anything. I always tell people, if you're proactive and not reactive, we have more options to be able to kind of help you navigate that. I hope this was helpful for our listeners tonight. Next week, we're going to have a pre-recorded show. I want to thank Jennifer for being here. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Bridger. Thank you, Nora, for being here. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.